You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. Hope you had a great Labor Day weekend. I am Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We start year two today. We start the NFL season today. But in the meantime, we've got a big show for you today. Lots to get to. John Gruden tells us why Khalil Mack is now a Bear. Bill Belichick is worried about the Texans. And the Eagles have finally made a quarterback decision. That is where we start this morning with news out of Philly. Eagles kicking off their season Thursday night against the Falcons with Nick Foles as their quarterback. He was named their starter yesterday. Not a big surprise, considering Carson Wentz still isn't cleared for contact. Head coach Doug Peterson said this move protects Wentz for the next 10 years. But, Nick, how vulnerable are the Eagles this week without Carson Wentz, with Nick Foles, who had a very shaky preseason, at the helm?
And Nick Foles, who was very shaky in the last game that these two teams played, the last bad game Nick Foles played that counted, if we're just going to throw out the preseason, the divisional game between the Eagles and Falcons. And so how vulnerable are they? Well, Vegas says it's a two-point spread, even though the game's in Philadelphia. So that leads you to believe these two teams without Carson Wentz in the lineup are about even. I'll add to it. I think the Falcons went strength on strength in the draft, drafting Calvin Ridley in the first round. And the only part of the Eagles' defense that I think is a little vulnerable is their secondary. So you add all of that. Also, we've talked about how Philly is trying to move on from last year, not have a Super Bowl or championship hangover. I would imagine the hardest that could possibly be is your first game since the Super Bowl in your stadium. They unveil the banner. You know you're on national TV starting the NFL season because you're the Super Bowl champions. For all those reasons, like, I would not be shocked at all if Atlanta wins. Atlanta's a really good team who was a really good team last year, mm-hmm. who was a goal line stand away from beating Philadelphia in the divisional round. So, yes, highly vulnerable without Carson Wentz.
Yeah, even if Carson Wentz was in the game, you say, is Philadelphia vulnerable because Carson Wentz hadn't played? I'd be like, yes. So now with Nick Foles in the game, are they vulnerable? Absolutely. Well, what's the biggest difference? Probably the biggest difference is Nick Foles' inability to be consistently throwing the football, especially on third down, and the red zone. If you look at the difference between that divisional game, Nick, that you talked about, where the Atlanta Falcons were in that game and one play there at the end could have easily won that game, man, it's how he performed in the red zone and third down against the Minnesota Vikings yep. and the New England Patriots. So is he going to go right back to that after what you mentioned, Jenna, having a poor preseason? We can't expect that. We can't expect him to play like he did against the Vikings. So I am concerned. Are they vulnerable in this first game? Yes, and I would say more so than most champions that we see, because most champions, you know, they have their starting quarterback. We can't forget that Nick Foles is a backup, even though they are Super Bowl champs.
And you mentioned the red zone and third downs. So this is something to watch for Philly all year long, and it's something to watch for Atlanta all year long. Philly last year was historically great on third down, particularly third and long. NFL history says that is not duplicable year over year. Teams that are astronomically good on third down in 1 year, they regress much closer to league average the following year. And that's, by the way, certainly with Wentz. And now with Nick Foles, you're going to see it even more so, at least early on. And then in the red zone, what was the difference between the 2016 Falcons and the 2017 Falcons? 2016, one of the highest scoring teams in NFL history, up there with the 98 Vikings, 07 Pats, one of Peyton's years in Denver. The difference was not what they did between the 20s. The difference was efficiency in the red zone. Going to Steve Sarkisian from Kyle Shanahan was where they had an enormous drop-off in the red zone, and that's how their season ended. They had a first and goal from the 9, down 5 points, and amazingly, on the first 3 downs, they don't throw a single pass into the end zone. They throw a pass to a fullback, but not a pass into the end zone. They don't even have one pass cross the goal line until it's 4th in their season. If that goes differently, then we're not talking about the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. We maybe are talking about the Super Bowl champion Atlanta Falcons.
But let's stick with the Eagles here. What's the one thing we said about the Eagles all offseason is that they're so deep, they're so stacked at so many different positions. Do they have enough on defense, on that offensive line, to withstand Nick Foles a week, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, starting with his inconsistency?
Absolutely. But the reason why they could do that was because the players stepped up. You know, there was question marks as far as their tackle. Vitae, he stepped up last year, hadn't played well this preseason. Nick Foles, he was inconsistent. Nick Wright gave up on the Eagles, but rightfully so. I mean, rightfully so. They hadn't earned that trust because Nick Foles being inconsistent. I think they're going to be better running the ball, and especially running the ball to their left side. Jason Peters will be back. So now I believe they have to lean more on that. Defensively, they're going to get after the quarterback. Atlanta's offensive line is going to have a lot of pressure. Their defensive line is better than it was last year, that being the Eagles. And Jordan Hicks, who runs their defense, their middle linebacker, he's back in the lineup. So, yes, Jenna, they are stacked. They are deep offensively and defensively. And the one reason why I liked them last year, because they got good big people. And they still have that.
And those good big people are going to have to carry them in this week one game. I'm not going to say for the early part of the season, because after Atlanta, they get a Tampa team that might be the worst team in the NFC. And then they get a Colts team that does not have good big people. And you would imagine they can overpower them. But against Atlanta, they are going to have to win a game the way they won the divisional game, a low-scoring defensive game. Like, let's not be confused by the fact that Philly beat the Pats in a shootout. That is an outlier performance. The way they beat Minnesota is more. Now, I know they scored a bunch of points, but Philly's defense equaled Minnesota's offense in that game from a point standpoint. Minnesota scored a touchdown, Philly had a pick six, and that changed the game. You cannot go into week one and say, we're going to beat Atlanta 31-28. At least I don't feel like you can. Not with Nick Foles, your quarterback. What you can go into the game against Atlanta saying is, we're going to obliterate this Falcons offensive line, which is actually a good offensive line. We're going to make it so they are one-dimensional. They cannot run the football, and they do not have more than 2.5 seconds to pass the football, because our front seven is going to win this game. That's got to be the outlook for Philly, who also has injuries at wide receiver. Darren Sproles coming back after missing over a year.
Alshon Jeffrey
is right now on the injured list. Jason Peters has missed almost a year. Like, a lot of parts of that offense are not going to be fully operational.
Doug Peterson really went out of his way to say, this is a move we're making because we want Wentz for the future and we don't need him for the first 1, 2, 3 games. But realistically, how soon do you think before the Eagles turn around and say, okay, we need to put Wentz back in? Well, when do you think he might be back?
We don't know. They had him. I'm surprised that he's not playing the first game after starting training camp, where it appears they said he would start the first day. They didn't tell us that he wasn't going to be clear for contact all of training camp. So we just anticipated he's not starting on PUP. He's starting the first day of practice. Man,
so
he's going to
be
ready.
No,
we can't guesstimate when he's going to be ready. But given the schedule that Nick pointed out, man, if they can get through this week number one with a win, man, they got a luxury of being able to sit back and maybe wait in a few weeks, and we might not see Carson Wentz maybe till the end of September at the earliest.
Because after the first 3 weeks, they reach the single most difficult part of their schedule, at least when we look at it going into a season.
Now.
And one of the most difficult parts of any schedule any team has in the league. After week 3, from week 4 to 8, they have 5 games. 3 are on the road. four are against playoff teams from last year. The one that isn't a playoff team from last year is a road game against the Giants, who we think is going to be better. They play Carolina. They play Jacksonville. They play a Titans team that made the playoffs and one team on, oh, Minnesota as well, in Philadelphia, a rematch of the NFC Championship game. Like, they need Wentz fully healthy, not just for the next 10 years, but for the 10 weeks following week one. So I understand why they're doing it, but one game difference in the standing last year, and I don't think they're Super Bowl champions.
Yeah, but one thing, too, NFL teams, Coach Mangini gets on you all the time. They say they're not looking at the schedule, Nick, but I guarantee you Doug Peterson's looked at that schedule and realized, man, if I can get through these first couple weeks without Carson Wentz before we go into that tough stretch, then we'll bring Carson back.
Well, the schedule for the Eagles starts with the Falcons. Eagles hosting the Falcons on Thursday night with Nick Foles at the helm for Philadelphia. We'll talk much more about this coming up. But on the other side, will Le'Veon Bell pay a price for missing so much time? That's next on First Things First. We will get to Le'Veon Bell in a second. But first, week one of college football. Great catch from Texas Tech's T.J. Vasher.
Oh, this was nasty right here. This was nasty. This was the one people thought it was the OBJ. But no, he brings that left hand on it to build security to the ground. Great catch now for T.J. Vasher. Unbelievable. Texas Tech, they like to throw the ball. Man, that was a special catch right there.
I'm probably prisoner of the moment in this, but I can't remember an opening weekend of college football with so many spectacular catches in big games.
Especially because it's warmer, a little more tacky on the gloves.
VMI,
it's amazing.
Toledo,
just
watch
like
closely.
That.
It's going to happen fast. The shortest punt return ever. Toledo won 66-3.
This is the way they coach it up. They tell you, dive for the point in front of the kicker and take the ball off his foot. No, literally.
I mean, honestly.
Take the ball off the punter's foot.
Danielle and I, that's my wife, were watching this highlight. I said, you got to see this. She's like, I didn't know that was allowed. Why don't they always do that? Well, they tried to. Very difficult. Oh, my God.
That was Devin DuVernay using every inch of his body to make a great touchdown catch in the Texas-Maryland game.
Diving like his coach into the gold room. Look at that. That's a hell of a play by Longhorns.
Yeah, Longhorns didn't have many things to cheer about holding that L against the Big Ten in Maryland without their coach.
Maryland's
get right. That's a great catch, though.
Maryland's get right game every year, evidently, is Texas.
Here you go, Nick. Syracuse, Western Michigan, Jamal Custis with the nice one-handed grab. Burns the D, gets into the end zone.
Going to see a lot. Oh, this is Syracuse.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, you had to overcome the school. This is double good.
Oh, my goodness. You know what? I was considering abandoning my school football-wise this year.
Like
this
30
play,
seconds
yeah,
ago.
I know, but this play might have brought me back. Let's go, Orange. Big East title in play.
Can I get my quarterback to lead my guy to the sideline?
We're in the ACC, though.
Oh,
that
no
ain't
problem.
Great for us.
All right, moving on. New topic. The Steelers will open their season in Cleveland on Sunday. They hope to have Le'Veon Bell by then, but he still hasn't shown up for practice. And he still hasn't signed his $14.5 million franchise tender. And as a result, his bosses are none too happy. Steelers GM Kevin Colbert released the following statement. We are disappointed Le'Veon Bell has not signed his franchise tender and rejoined his teammates. We will continue to focus on preparing the players on our roster for our regular season opener against the Browns. Chris, how big of a deal is it that Bell still hasn't signed that franchise tag?
One of my biggest issues with the Pittsburgh Steelers is their messaging point. They seem in the last several years, they can't stay on message. As far as, what are we trying to do? Like, they should be trying to win a Super Bowl. With this collection of talent that they've had, they've underachieved the last several years, and it becomes difficult when players on the team, when general manager has to issue a statement that don't know when he's going to be here. I wish I could talk about it. I'm disappointed. His disappointment speaks to the lack of communication, the lack of continuity, because there shouldn't be a misunderstanding between Bell and the general manager. He's either coming in Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. Wednesday's the last day because you're actually starting to practice. But Monday and Tuesday, you are putting in the game plan to get ready for the Cleveland Browns. So for me, of the teams that we talk about have Super Bowl aspiration, who is off point message point today And I'd say all those other teams are on point, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, they're still waiting for one of their best players who's going to play a significant role if they're going to be Super Bowl champs, Nick.
Listen, on the vast majority of teams in the league, he'd be their most skilled player on the roster. This team has Antonio Brown, so we don't talk about him as their best guy, take quarterbacks out of it. But that's how good he is. Now, as far as the team being disappointed, listen, L. Bell could release his own statement. I'm very disappointed that I've been franchise tagged for the second straight year despite production that would warrant a long-term contract. I'm very disappointed that Aaron Donald got a contract early. Khalil Mack got a contract early. Odell Beckham got a contract early. Aaron Rodgers got a contract early. And I'm on my second year of a franchise tag, so I'm disappointed too. But is it good for Pittsburgh? Of course not. Like, last year he got in on Labor Day. And we saw, and we can show the audience, he was one player in September while he was catching up to speed, and one player the rest of the year. Rushing yards per game in September, 60. Rest of the year, 90. Yards per carry, less than 3.5 to more than 4. Receiving yards, less than 20 a game to more than 50 a game. Yards per catch, 4.5 to 8.5. Like, that's two different players. The guy on the left is below replacement level NFL running back. The guy on the right is Le'Veon Bell. A guy who deserves to be paid at the top of the market. But this isn't great for them because this is something of a make or break year for Pittsburgh. There's a long list of teams in NFL history that it's taken to the fifth year of straight playoff appearances to actually make or win a Super Bowl. Dungy's Colts were like this. There's a handful of others. There's not many that went five straight years in the playoffs, didn't make a Super Bowl, and then made it down the road. This is a critical year for Pittsburgh.
There are a lot of fans that are asking, well, if he's so great, if he's such a fantastic skilled player, so valuable to this team, you saw it after the first three games, why not pay him? Why not extend him? Like, what do you think that the Steelers are thinking?
Pittsburgh,
for years,
they have not signed players to second and third contracts. Guys that they've drafted, they've had a plan. And that plan's been very, very successful. What they've done of late is they've signed Ben. They always sign their quarterbacks, of course. And they signed Antonio to a long extension. If you look at how much money they already have allocated to the offense, I didn't think they were going to sign L. Bell. So I'm not disappointed. I like to see players get paid, but there's also a business model. I see what Pittsburgh's doing. They can't afford to sign him to $15, $18 million when Antonio's making $17 and Ben is making $20. So, no, the money is not there. So I didn't expect it. But you do, he is going to sign the tender, and they are still going to have Super Bowl aspirations if he has a long-term contract or if he has a one-year contract.
Listen, last year, what I'm not going to do with the Steelers is say, oh, they'll be fine because the first 3 weeks of the year they have soft competition. And by the way, defensively they do. They play Kansas City, who's got bad defense, Tampa's got a bad defense.
But this is the team that plays up and down to their competition almost more than anyone else.
Well, and this is a team that last year was 13-1, against everyone that wasn't New England or Jacksonville. Who was the one? A week 3 loss to the Chicago Bears in Chicago when Le'Veon Bell was wholly unproductive. So, like, does that sound anything like maybe a week 3 game against Tampa this year or a week 1 game against Cleveland? Like, that's absolutely in play for a team that is particularly plays down to its competition on the road, and two of its 3 early games are on the road. And so, no, this could absolutely be meaningful. Now, Pittsburgh also could resend the tag. Pittsburgh does have some amount of leverage here where if they really wanted to see if how much poker Le'Veon wants to play, they could resend the tag a few days before the season and see who else wants to pay.
Yeah, Pittsburgh's been a classy organization. I don't see them doing that. It's just there's certain players you can get paid, but you're not going to get paid for certain teams. The pie is only so big.
Right.
All right? And if they have 3/4 of the pie going to allocate to their offense, they already got a bad defense. If they sign L. Bell, how would they ever be able to repair that over the years? So I'm not like Nick. This is not a critical year for the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Pittsburgh Steelers, Ben Roethlisberger, as long as he's there, they're going to have a chance to win. Tom Brady's only going to be in New England so many more years. Ben Roethlisberger could be the best quarterback in the AFC for the next after he retires for those next couple years.
So let me just ask this because I'm very surprised here you say you don't think it's a critical year for the Steelers. We agree that this is, in all likelihood, Le'Veon's last year with Pittsburgh.
Absolutely. So that's a no-brainer.
Right. So if you if they don't get to a Super Bowl this year, offensively, there's no reason to believe they're going to be as dangerous next year.
No, but I believe his offensive productivity is a lot of it can be replaced because of what they do. Like, I have been on offense that have been prolific like this. And the running back, he can be replaced. Now, can you replace him as a wide receiver? The thing about it, you can't pay the guy $15 million the way their business model is. So I only got him for one more year. So Pittsburgh Steelers, I believe, will be able to move on and still be successful, just like they've moved on from every other great player that they've had.
Just real quick, how late into the week could he show up and still realistically play on Sunday?
He can show up on Friday and play on Sunday, but he's not going to be an all-pro running back. He's going to be there's going to be another guy out there wearing 2-6. All right, the real 2-6 will show up in 3 weeks. Football is a game that you get better practicing. The only conditioning that you can get, you can't get this at a gym. You can't get this in South Florida where he's supposed to be training. Right. All right, you can't simulate game action.
All right, let's take a little turn now. Time for Nick's Fantasy Update, sponsored by DraftKings. All right, Nick, you are picking one quarterback today. Mm-hmm. Ready? Give us one stud and then one value pick.
All right. So on the stud side of things, I'm going to the New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees, not only because I think he might win league MVP this year, not only because Mark Ingram isn't there, so you would expect them to rely more on the passing game, but they are playing arguably the worst defense in the entire NFL, Tampa Bay. They are in New Orleans in a controlled environment. I know he's expensive. Bite the bullet. Pay the $6,800 on DraftKings and take Drew Brees.
Yeah, because Fitzy going to be throwing it to New Orleans defense, too. Fitzy going to be starting for Tampa Bay in New Orleans. I like that Drew Brees right there.
All right, so my value pick is not Fitzy. My value pick is Pat Mahomes. He's only 6,000 on DraftKings.
Be careful, people.
It's less than guys like Russell Wilson. He might throw a couple picks.
This one smells like home cooking.
Oh, listen, the Chargers, they don't have Jason Verrett due to injury. I expect a high-scoring game out west. Nice weather in California. Check the weather report like my man CeCe told me to. Pat Mahomes as a value pick at only 6,000 DraftKings dollars. Drew Brees, my stud. Pat Mahomes, you're trying to save a little money on your quarterback.
Haven't we missed this a little bit?
I've missed it so much. Nick's picks coming back soon.
First Things First is sponsored by DraftKings. Play the free DraftKings team pick'em to win your share of $1 million today. Back here on First Things First, time for us to go viral. Klay Thompson has plenty to celebrate this offseason after winning his third ring in 4 years. Here he is overseas in Qatar, living his best life, riding camels.
Look at Klay. Klay really does enjoy the offseason. Yeah, grows his hair out, stops shaving.
Gets on camels. Klay hopped on the gram, posted a picture of himself, Tracy McGrady, Mello, Luke Walton, with the caption, "Future Big Three champ." In his comments, Klay told KD he could be a super sub, while Draymond posted 300 laughing emojis.
Klay is impossible not to like. His production is always the same.
Yes.
He's great player both sides of the ball and is just permanently chill.
Absolutely. I believe he might be the most missed of them, too, because of all the different things he had. Probably their best defensive player. Mm-hmm. All right? I'm going to get my shots. I don't care who y'all sign. Yeah. And I'm going to relax and get away from it. I like Klay.
And can we just zoom in real quick on what Klay looks like now?
I think it's a great
look. His hair's grown out. The beard. Look at Klay Thompson. He told KD he could only shoot 4-pointers in the big three if he joined the team. Oh, my. Mello, by the way, Mello, who does not like joking on Instagram, told him to get the bleep out of here. Mello never knows how to take a joke
at all.
My guy Mello is the opposite of permachill.
I don't know why he'd be so defensive given he don't play that defense.
All right. Why? Time now for some stories to start your morning. Yesterday, Josh Gordon was a full participant in practice. He had tweaked his hamstring, but looked good over the weekend. Hugh Jackson says Gordon's on schedule to play against the Steelers on Sunday, but he won't start. CeCe, what are realistic week one expectations for Josh Gordon?
Probably to play around 20 plays. I mean, a bad hamstring, especially for a big, muscular guy like him. Man, they really, really need him, but I would spot playing. 20, 25 plays. Typically, NFL team's going to have 65 to 70 plays.
Listen, if he's going to play week one, then there is nothing Josh Gordon could have done short of being suspended or not showing back up to not play week one. He missed the first three weeks of training camp while he was tending to his own mental and personal health, which is fine. And then he got hurt right when he got back. You talk about how important it is to practice football to get better at football. This guy's played very little football over the last 3 years, missed almost all of training camp, and he's still going to play week one.
I know Joe Hayden, who's also a cornerback, former Brown, playing for the Steelers. He don't want to see Josh Gordon healthy.
Not even for 20 snaps, nope.
All right, the 49ers got some bad news over the weekend. One of their key offseason acquisitions, running back Jerick McKinnon, is out for the season with a torn ACL. See, how's this loss going to impact the Niners' offense?
Oh, it's going to affect Kyle Shanahan, how he wants to do things. I think he would have been their number one receiver, the most dependable guy. Affects the offensive core of the play calling. Going to affect Jimmy Garoppolo. I told you, Nick, in season number two there that I thought Jimmy Garoppolo, watch yourself, pump your brakes a little bit. Don't fall in love with those five games, and Jerick McKinnon, well, it will hurt his growth as his second year as a starting quarterback for San Francisco 49ers.
He's an underrated pass catcher, so I'm glad you brought that up. He was one of the better weapons out of the backfield on Minnesota last year, particularly after Dalvin Cook went down. This is a team almost totally bereft of weapons on the outside, so they're going to need him as a pass catcher for Jimmy Garoppolo. And this is, I also am skeptical that, oh, Jimmy G, who's already like he's 16-1 to win the MVP. Everyone calm down a bit. And this is a team last year that was winless through 10 weeks. Remember that when people think they can be a playoff team in the brutal NFC. This is a tough loss right before the season starts.
On to the Raiders now. Rosters were cut down to 53 this weekend, and Oakland raised some eyebrows when they cut wideout Martavis Bryant. John Gruden said it was, quote, a risk that was well worth taking. Remember, the Raiders traded a third-round pick in April for Bryant. Nick, what do you make of the move?
I mean, I guess buyer beware. The Steelers knew that this was potentially a bit of a ticking time bomb because we are now hearing that he might be facing another year-long banishment from the league. But if you're Oakland and you traded a third-round pick for him a few months ago, cutting him before you know he's definitively going to be suspended makes this a total washout. And for Oakland to be rebuilding while simultaneously having the oldest roster in the NFL in at least 6 years is, to me, two trains going in different directions. This is a bad look.
Nick, they always talk about buyer beware. And I'm right now, the Oakland Raiders, I'm concerned with John Gruden. The decision-making, the roster makeup, the age of the teams. Like, we just haven't seen someone who's managing be successful. Why would you trade a third-round pick for a guy who's been suspended twice? Not once. So for me, I question what they're doing in Oakland. This was a bad, bad gamble here.
And the day after they cut Martavis, they gave up a future fifth rounder for A.J. McCarron. Like, what's going on?
All right, finally.
I think you can find that in front of your house on Mondays and Thursdays in New York City.
The Raiders,
Tuesdays and Thursdays in my neighborhood, but I got you.
The Raiders' loss is the Bears' gain, big gain. In a move that had a lot of us scratching our heads, Oakland sent their best player, Khalil Mack, in a second-round and fifth-round pick to the Bears for two first-round picks, a third and a sixth. Head coach John Gruden with a lot of questions to answer over the weekend.
The negotiation was what it was. It was tough. It was a long process. We talked about it daily. We made an offer. I don't believe we were anywhere close to where the Bears were. And the Bears made us an offer that we thought was really unique. And very, very tough to say goodbye to a great player. But here we are today.
Nick, if you listen to Gruden's entire press conference, he had a couple of contradictory statements. Mm-hmm. What did you make of what he just said there?
Well, I think the most notable phrase is, you look at what he got, and we were nowhere close. Well, that means the deal was never getting done.
No.
It wasn't because Aaron Donald set a new standard. It wasn't because Khalil Mack just held the line at a couple million-dollar difference. Listen, the Bears paid a premium, and Oakland got the most they possibly could have gotten for the player. They got two first-round picks. I know they gave up a second, but they have a third coming back. So they got two first-round picks for Khalil Mack. That is the most you can ever get for a player being traded in the NFL. And it was still a bad deal for them. And it was still a deal that I think risks losing not only some of the fan base as far as their support. If you're a fan in Oakland, all right, you're leaving me in 2 years anyway. We're not going to be any good this year. You just gave away our best player. Like, what am I actually here for? But also potentially losing your locker room. Coach says all the time, see, you echo it. As a general manager or a head coach, and in this case, Gruden's essentially both, you tell your players a story by who you pay, but you also tell them a story by who you choose not to pay or who you deal out of town. And so if they were never close to the $90 million guaranteed, they were never close to signing him, they were never intent on re-signing their best player, and now the Raiders enter what is a weakened AFC that theoretically you thought they could compete in this season with no shot of competing whatsoever.
The Raiders are going to be under tremendous scrutiny. It's hard to get players like Khalil Mack, and it's hard to impossible to get great players who have the overall athletic character that Khalil has, off-the-field character that he has, and also the leadership. Like, you're not going to be able to find a player. Like, so if they want someone to rush the passer, they're going to draft them. They're going to draft them one of those draft picks, right? And they're hoping one day
they'll turn into Khalil Mack.
But from a business model, I would just respect it more if they'd just been like, it doesn't fit what we're trying to do. He is a great player. Did he deserve a great contract? Yes. But given what we see in the future, even though I don't see that on their roster, right, given what I see in the future, I didn't think right now committing that kind of dollars, because also the way the collective bargain is where you have to put that money in escrow, I didn't think the Raiders were ever going to do that. If you look at the amount of percentage that you have to finance in that, and we know, we've talked about it, their finances are the weakest in the NFL.
People should know what C's talking about. Whatever the guaranteed dollars are, you got to put that basically in a vault somewhere. So when $90 million is guaranteed to Khalil Mack, he gets a check, I think, for like $40 million in the next few weeks from Chicago. But the rest of that $90 million, they have to set aside. Now, that seems silly for most teams. Like, hey, guess what? We got it. But some teams, one team might not actually have
it. And that's the Raiders.
To which I would say, if that's the case, C, then privately behind closed doors, there needs to be a discussion about whether or not the Davis family should own this football team. If they are making player decisions based on we can't set the money aside, that is not professional football in America standards.
Right. That meeting's not going to take place. It's impossible. If you look at how Al Davis got managing control of the, it was very kind of shady and everything, yeah, how he got it. But they can hide behind the model of we just can't commit that many resources to a defense that has a lot of holes. And if someone wanted to, let's say the Raiders' argument, they had Khalil Mack and their defense was still bad. If they commit all those dollars to him, how are they going to improve when they're already paying their young quarterback $20 million? They got Amari Cooper. Is it going to be expecting a deal $18 million, $16 million in that range next year? So it becomes complicated.
We can't move on until we talk about what Khalil Mack does for this Chicago Bears defense, which is there's already a solid defense, and then you add him. How does that unit look?
Listen, this is a big bet on Mitch Trubisky. What the Bears are clearly saying is if Trubisky's no good, none of this matters anyway. So let's add a superstar player while our quarterback's cheap. This is a theme. We saw the Eagles win a Super Bowl this way. We saw the Rams contend this way. Cheap quarterback, add superstars. If you'd asked me 96 hours ago, the Bears defense, which was fringe top 10 last year, what's the single biggest need they have? I'd said a big-time pass rushing outside backer. And they are D-end outside backer. And they added the single best in the league at this. See, I think we talked about this over the weekend. This almost now has a feel of like Western Conference, Eastern Conference.
In basketball. As far as the good players from the West coming to the East in the NFL, that's the way it is. And I'm going to tell you who was not happy with this deal. Chicago was ecstatic. Matthew Stafford in Detroit, not very happy. Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. And yo, cuz there in Minnesota, if you're going to spend $28, $30 million on your quarterback, go out and get you someone like Khalil Mack if you don't have that type of firepower from the quarterback. So this division got so much tougher. F the Bears, hypothetically. F the Bears are the worst team in this division. Oh, my goodness.
See, just for people that don't know if Matt can play week one, what did Bill Parcells say about his position?
You have to know this distinction from the beginning. Does a guy know the difference between sit and sick him? All right? Because this offseason, what was he doing? Sitting. Oh, he'll know how to sick him. He'll get on the outside. And yeah, you can do that. You can do that from your couch. A lot different than being a running back than being a rush defensive end.
All right, good stuff there. Moving on to Colin Kaepernick now. This will be his second straight season without a team. However, he will be the face of Nike's 30th anniversary ad campaign. Nike taking a gamble that it won't alienate any customers backing Kaepernick. Cap tweeted the following photo with the caption, "Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything." CeCe, what was your reaction to the campaign?
I was very, very fortunate because Cap sent this to me yesterday to give me a heads up that they were going to be releasing it. So I'm happy for him. There's two sides of this for me. I'm happy that he's able to get some support by someone who's been doing it for a long, long time and someone who I respect. I was a Nike athlete for at least 25 years. A Nike athlete, went to a Nike school at Ohio State and signed with Nike and wore Nikes throughout my career. And Nike has provided me with merchandise for a long, 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 long time. So I must say that before my comments. I'm happy he has someone like Nike because Nike does get behind edgy campaigning, and that is real support. There's people out there saying, "Hey, you know something? I got your back. I got your support." But when Nike gets behind you, especially in something in the athletic field, you really have some strong support. But the other side of it, I still see a kid, not a man that's trying to make people more aware, but I still see a kid who's not going to be able to play in the National Football League. We're getting ready to start our 99th season, and you still got you got quarterbacks. Blake Bortles, they're in Jacksonville. Is he the answer? You got a quarterback situation in Buffalo. They just got traded a quarterback, put in a guy who threw 5 interceptions in the first half, and the guy they drafted in the first round, not going to play him. So for me, I'm sad that he's not playing in the league, because to me, that's the end game. All right? The best players playing in the league. Cap should still be playing, but he has tremendous support from Nike. I'm happy he's able to move forward because I don't think he'll ever put on an NFL uniform again.
And I'm going to take some slight issue with one of the things you said in the lead up, which is Nike betting that it's not going to alienate customers. No, I disagree. Nike knows it's going to alienate certain people with this. I think they are making a twofold bet. One, that there are other people that will redouble their support for Nike, or maybe folks that used to be Adidas or Under Armour fans and say, you know what, I'm going to go support Nike in support of Cap. But also Nike is looking to me, they are looking at this on a much longer time horizon than the next quarterly balance sheet and the next stock market open. They are saying, what have we represented? This is our 30th anniversary. What have we represented for 30 years, essentially, most notably, the last 25, since Jumpman and Jordan, when we said, you know what, we are going to make a black man the face of a marketing campaign, when that was, I mean, OJ had done the rent-a-car commercials, and that was about the list. And yes, Nike made a huge bet on Jordan. How about Tiger? We're going to make a black man the face of our golf. We're going to create a golf industry that didn't exist. The Williams sisters with tennis.
And they have done it.
They have done it. And Nike is saying, we believe that, and Cap is not Ali, and I'm not saying he's Ali, but where I'm going to make the comparison is, Ali was much less popular while he was engaged in his peaceful protest than we fondly remember when we think back on Muhammad Ali. And they are making a bet that history will judge Cap much more favorably than he is being judged right now. And they want to be on the right side of that history. They think it is important for their overall global brand to be on the right side of that history. And I know some people have taken issue with the sacrifice everything. And people have made the facile comparison of, oh, you really want to talk about sacrificing everything. What about our soldiers who sacrificed life and limb? Listen, I think that is a very unfair standard to hold any of us to. If people have bad things happen to them or injuries or whatever, and by the standard of did you die in a war, then all of us are going to fall short. But to Chris's point, he did sacrifice his career. He did sacrifice, I don't know what Nike's paying him. It's not the money he'd be making as an NFL quarterback. There's no question about it. So he did not only sacrifice money, he sacrificed the joy of playing football, and he did that for what he believes to be the greater good of helping out people who need it. And I have tremendous respect for that. And I have, listen, Nike is not a perfect company. Everybody knows that. And none of these shoe companies are. But I have respect for them going out on a limb here with Colin Kaepernick on their 30th anniversary.
And I hope he's able to accomplish everything that he wants to accomplish. But the one thing that, Nick, you always ask me, you say, Chris, man, going back on it, like, would you change certain things in your career? And I tell you, there's certain things that I had to do. Of course, I'd like to change them, but where I ended up, I'd have to go through them. But the joy that I have as someone who exhausted everything playing football. Like, I have no desire to play football. When I watch football, I don't think I should be out there. And I have a lot of my friends, they don't have that because they wish they would have done things a different way. They wish they could have played longer. Nike won't be able to replace that because he'll always have that. I wish I could have played some more football. So I don't get caught up into what the movement is and what he's trying to. I still see the kid that when he's an older man, they're still not going to be able to get that hunger to be able to say, man, I wonder how good I could have been at playing that game that I love.
But he does now have an incredibly powerful platform. If it took a little bit of a backseat in the last 6 months or 8 months or so, and I think we discussed this morning, a lot of people didn't realize he was still working with Nike. Nike has put him back on the national stage now where he could do, and yes, he probably will never play football again, but he could do a lot of good because he has the proverbial microphone in his face once again.
I personally think he is doing a lot of good. I think the things he's doing with the Know Your Rights campaigns, with meeting with young people, putting his money where his mouth is when he said he was going to donate that $1 million, which, by the way, he committed to donating before he knew he was done making NFL money, and he continued followed through on the donation after he was done making NFL money. I think he is doing a lot of good. I also think that him talking about it might satisfy a lot of us, but I don't think people's minds are getting changed on this. We've talked about this for almost 2 years, and people have decided what the facts are going to be, whether those facts are accurate or not, and they've decided where they stand. And I'm yet to meet someone that come up to me and say, you know what, you changed my mind on Colin Kaepernick.
Sure.
That person, I'd love to meet that person. That person I'm yet to meet.
All right, we're going to take a break. Much more First Things First right after this. Stay with us. Back here on First Things First with Super Bowl champ Chris Caney. Chris, football's here.
Football is here.
Finally.
48 hours.
You woke up in a good mood today.
Absolutely. I'm excited. It. Plus, I had a pretty good holiday weekend. So
that too.
You know, long weekend, 3-day weekend. Got away for a little bit.
Nice.
A little sun and fun.
Good stuff.
The whole itinerary.
Tell us more.
That's
Break
enough.
It out.
We've
okay, we're
enough.
Good. Thank you.
Wow. Really? Really?
You were messing me off the air.
A little bit of shade.
Eat that, Canny.
In a move that surprised just about no one, the Jets announced Sam Darnold to be their starting quarterback. Darnold will be the youngest QB to start a season since the merger, beating out 39-year-old Josh McCown for the job. The stage will be big. Monday Night Football, Jets, Lions. Head coach Todd Bowles said that Darnold's kept his head down and he earned the nod through the course of training camp. All right, Chris Caney, what are reasonable expectations for Sam Darnold in his debut now?
I think we got to start with what we can expect from the Detroit Lions, and Matt Patricia is a defensive guy at heart.
Oh, yeah?
You know, he's going to throw everything in his playbook at the young quarterback to see if he has an understanding and command of the offense. But with that being said, I think Jeremy Bates can go a long way to helping his young quarterback get a great start to his pro career. Being able to script the first 15, you know, West Coast offense coordinators, they love to be able to do that, give Sam Darnold opportunity to see some of the things that he's going to see on Monday night during this course of practice during the week, and then also just understanding the little things that can help him when facing defenses, right? Sprinkling in a little bit of up-tempo to standardize the looks, especially on second and third and long, so your quarterback is not having to deal with those exotic blitzes. And then, of course, through your schemes and formation, being able to give him a clean picture of what the defense is doing, especially the coverage on the back end, making sure that those guys have to declare so Sam Darnold can work half a field and know where he wants to go with the football. I think that's what Jeremy Bates and the offensive staff for the Jets will do. And because of that, I think Sam Darnold will have a lot of success in his first regular season game.
I think he gets a couple breaks because of where they play and when they play. I believe he gets a break because Matt Patricia, the Detroit defense has struggled over the years. They do have Darius Slay. People don't know about him. He's one of the best corners. So they will probably play a lot of in-your-face against the Jets wide receivers. But I believe playing on Monday night's a huge advantage for the rookie. He's able to watch Thursday night, and then he's able to watch a full slate of games on Sunday. And he's going to see, you know something? That was not the same speed of the games in these preseason games. So I think in sitting around and watching, as a young player, you're able to see what's going on. There's going to be some train wrecks. There's going to be some quarterbacks that can't stop their team from being in a car accident. So I think that will help him. That first Monday night game at 6 o'clock in Detroit, there shouldn't be a whole bunch of overwhelming crowd noise. There's a lot tougher places he could be playing in week number one going against a rookie coach. I believe they add to the rookie being successful in week number one, Nick.
And here's the thing for the Jets. We can't talk about how weak the AFC is repeatedly and then look at the Jets, who has a 5-win team last year, which isn't good, but it's not 2 or 3 wins. Theoretically, are going to be better at quarterback, theoretically going to be better defensively, and just say, okay, the year's meaningless. Like, just throw it out. No, they go into this year saying, hey, could we get to 500? Would being at 500 be enough to be in the wild card picture in the AFC late in the season? And so what does that mean we need to see from Sam Darnold? I think it's fair to say they need to open up the playbook a little more than what they did in the preseason. The preseason, to me, they were trying to protect the decision they knew they wanted to make.
Yeah, I'd be careful about the preseason, because what they're going to do with the guy to make him successful, every preseason game I watched, I thought the quarterbacks, I mean from veteran quarterbacks to him, to saying, wow, this is very, very vanilla. So I think that he's getting banged on because people think, wow, they gave him a bunch of easy throws. If you see the touchdown he threw to Terrell Pryor, they had coverage on him in the end zone. He comes down to the number three receiver. So watch just trying to put it on the young guy, because from Tom Brady on down to Darnold, besides Baker Mayfield, besides that, all the preseason is very, very vanilla. But because he's a rookie, we just say, oh, Jeremy Bates and them, they didn't do him right in the preseason.
Well, I guess that's really...
Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. Because I watched the Jets games are on locally, so you're able to see them in their entirety, unlike all the other preseason games. And it felt to me even more so than Tom Brady, or certainly the other rookies, that it was high completion percentage, low yards per catch repeatedly with him. And the reason, and maybe you're right that was more thematic throughout the entire preseason. I just wasn't seeing all of it. Mm-hmm. The point that I'm making is I think they are going to have to take at least a few more chances in the regular season than we saw in the preseason, because they can't look at this year just as a Sam Darnold development year. They should look at this year as how good can we be until we find out we can't be good enough. Like, I don't think it's smart for any team, particularly a team in the AFC East. They might be the second-best team in this division.
I think they should be considered the second-best team in this division.
Right, and so if that's the case, then we can't look at the Jets through the prism of, all right, it's just about development. It's also about winning games. And when you drew the NFC North, and your first game of the year is against theoretically the weakest team in the NFC North, particularly now that Chicago has Khalil Mack, you have to look at this game as a big opportunity, at least to me. If I'm the Jets, I'm looking at this game not just how will Sam Darnold's debut go, but this is an opportunity to get to 1-0, an opportunity to start our year off well before we get Miami, a divisional team, winless Cleveland. Like, have a chance to start our year off well and see if this can be one of those years. Like, what was Mark Sanchez's rookie year? He didn't play well, and they made a deep playoff run.
Yeah,
like,
AFC Championship.
I'm not assigning that to them, but I don't think they should disqualify it before the year begins.
No, I completely agree with you, and they're not just going to give Todd Bowles another throwaway year. Remember, ownership last year said he was going to judge the coaching staff based on the progression of the young players, but you can't justify a coach's job security if he has 3 consecutive seasons where he's 5-11 or worse. So they have to stack wins. They got to get wins in this season, but I have to look at this and say, okay, you have to try to win the games that you have when you're facing inferior competition. And I know there ain't no Alabama States on an NFL schedule, CeCe, but if you look at it on paper, the Jets schedule on the front end of this season is a lot easier than the back half. So you have to take advantage of those opportunities. And with a young quarterback, you have to take advantage of the physical skill sets that he brings to the table. So we know Sam Darnold has the athleticism and arm talent. Maybe you consider some things like moving the pocket and then being able to change the launch point and then give him some extra time to push the ball down the field. But I think a lot of his success early will depend on the offensive coordinator, Jeremy Bates, putting him in situations where he can have success.
Is there anything that sticks out to either one of you guys that the Jets can exploit for the rookie on the other side of the ball in Matt Patricia?
his first game as an NFL head coach? Are there any certain things there that jump out to you, like this is a place where the Jets can generate an advantage because we're up against a rookie head coach?
Any Bill Belichick coach defense, it's not about being a rookie. They always struggle as far as their linebackers covering running backs or tight ends. So I'm going to get either my tight end or my running backs involved in the passing game because it doesn't go well for their combination coverages they like to play. So I'm going to get Sam Darnold. I'm going to get him some looks throwing the ball to my running backs, hoping that those linebackers are not going to be able to cover him. That's the way I go against any Bill Belichick disciple, if that's Mike Vrabel, there being in Tennessee. Or any of the other coaches.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.